Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. This is PartyCast episode. We've got Chris here, Brooks here, Purnell's here, Andy Sperry's here. How is everybody doing?
Doing okay. Yeah.
We're all right.
Finally, everyone talked at once. Finally, that worked out.
I was waiting for it.
Oh, I've been waiting.
Finally, it always happens.
I was distracted because my cat's like right up on my microphone. So
perfect.
Hi, kitty.
She's ignoring you.
Here's the thing.
I went down to the corner store for my day, like my caffeine, my shot of caffeine before I did this show, because you know, got to keep this insane energy level up. And I was tempted by and ended up purchasing a one of those like Jack Link beef sticks that's flavored like Doritos. So it's like the sweet chili Doritos flavor of a beef stick.
Interesting.
Yeah, such mixed feelings over those things.
They should be better. It was okay. But, oh man, Cricket, my second youngest cat, really, really was very interested in that beef stick. Like, she was, like, munching at it in midair. So, she's coming around here, because obviously the smell lingers because it's a beef stick. And she's looking for it now.
Going through the trash.
She'll definitely be. She'll be going through that trash later for sure.
We have a trash hound and a food hound, our predator. Anytime anyone has food, she's sitting next to them meowing for some. Like other cats, they'll sit around and they'll be like, oh, there's food? All right, if you throw us some, I guess we'll eat it. Predator is in your face. Like, bitch, give me your food. I know you have food. I want food. You're going to give me your food.
Wow.
And she usually gets a piece of food.
she gets out her Switch knife. Like,
like
an old timey gangster. Yeah.
I've got a cat that's kind of like that too. I'll just like sit behind you and wait for you to drop something and then just keep meowing at you. I'm like,
oh, my cats are going at it now. Oh.
Meow, what been it?
Hopefully nothing's wrong.
Don't tempt fate.
So how is everyone's week?
You don't want me to answer that question.
It's been dreadful. Okay. It's been okay.
You're not supposed to say dreadful. You're supposed to be like...
I said stressful.
You're not supposed to say that either. You're supposed to be like...
My week's been fantastic.
Woo. There we go. That's what I'm expecting here. It's been a sweet diggums. Yeah, that's good.
My week since I saw y'all was stressful and fantastic.
Ooh, so,
nice.
Why is that?
Y'all already know. I think I already talked to a couple of y'all, but last Tuesday I was with y'all. And as you know, my panel at Anime Expo 2024 was approved a bit earlier in the year. And I've been planning it. I have the presentation done. I had like 67 slides, hour and a half presentation, pretty much ready to go. I'm going to give it in a few weeks. And then 2 weeks ago, a couple people reached out to me and they're like, hey, man, did you change times of when your panel is going to be, the panel you've been promoting? And I was like, no. They're like, really? You didn't change to be like 2 hours earlier than you were previously, which is 8:30 on July 4th. And I was like, no. So I looked it up and turns out they had booked me right after another panel called Otome 101. That's the name of my panel. And looking into it further, the first panel Otome 101 is called 2024 edition and is run by like literally a celebrity in the industry. Like he makes all the Ikemen games. They're like really big apps right now. So that's going to be a heavily promoted panel, not the end of the world, but so I started calling Anime Expo staff like a lot, and they didn't get back to me until Wednesday, last Wednesday afternoon, and they were like, hey, we're so sorry about that, like, I don't know how we didn't notice that, but that's gonna hurt both panels. And I was like, no sweat, can you guys move me to another time slot or another day? And y'all know I haven't really been to a convention before, ever done a panel, so I don't know how this works. But they were like, lol, no, we can't change the schedule at all. And I was like, well, can I change my name? Like, can I change my name and concept? Because, like, at what point, like, the main thing I'm worried about at this point is people walking into my panel and being like, oh, is this not Hiroto's panel? And I'm like, no. And, like, they walk out or they miss the celebrities panel. Like, it's just kind of a nightmare for a lot of different reasons. I don't care if, like, baby's first panel doesn't go well, but, like, I was just trying to get some experience. But, like, I don't want to piss anybody off. And I just, like, I didn't know how to deal with this. So they were like, we're so sorry, we can't move you. And I was like, well, can I change my name? Can I change my concept? And they actually, you guys might have seen the video I posted about this, but, like, I was trying to keep the video short. At first, the answer was no. And I freaking, like, oh, I canceled my next work meeting because they called me when I was at work and my panel partner couldn't pick up. So she was like, please handle this. And, like, I just started begging. I was like, please, please, please. Oh, my God, dude. And I, like, really ingratiated myself to the lady working it. She was like, I feel so bad for you. I'm so sorry about this. And I got it from, like, a no to a yes. And then I was like, can we change the name in the printed pamphlet? She was like, best I can do is we can change it online only. And I was like, oh my God. And I just kind of like, I was being really nice to her because like, there's nothing that can be done. There's no reason to be mean. But I was just kind of like, dude, I've been promoting this panel and like, my partner's flying in from Texas for this. I like live in North California. I'm going to be like coming from 6 hours away. Like, please, like, you got to work with me on this. And she actually like, went to go talk to the printers. They said I had about an hour left. So within an hour, with no notice, I came up with a completely new concept and title. And it was a huge rush. And now I'm going with that. And I started my presentation from scratch. And I've actually made some pretty decent progress. But, like, it was, like, one of the biggest adrenaline rushes ever. And, yeah, I don't know.
That's awesome. Dang. That it worked out.
I'm sure some tense music was playing in the background. And you were like, oh, crap, here we go.
If I don't get
this done, I gotta reload a save point.
Dude, it was crazy. So wish me luck. I'm gonna have a busy week, but I also why like. Bother? I think
you're gonna do fine. You're
gonna crush it.
You don't need luck.
What's the new title?
I hope somebody films it and puts it online for me to see later.
Actually, I am allowed to film it and use it internally, quote unquote, which means I can like share with family and friends. I can like isolate
and post it.
But like, well, you have to like, you have to pay extra to like have official recordings if you want to like promote the, like they want to do it in a recording room and that's like a $2,000 deposit. So they're like, but you can like film it on a phone or like have a friend film it and just like share it with people you care about or like make clips or like put it on stories. So I thought that was really interesting. I've never done anything like this before. And it's just like so much to learn about this stuff. But yeah, so to answer Andy's question, you know, my friend Hannah reached out to me and she has done panels before and she's the one who started making me think I could do something like this and I should apply with her and she's gonna kind of teach me how it goes. She already had a panel she was working on called Otome 101 and it's like we're gonna introduce you to the otome genre because a lot of people don't know what that is and just sort of talk to you about like if you like shoujo anime, if you like Black Butler, if you're like getting more into manga, like maybe this is something you could really like that you don't know about. Because I was into anime and manga for a few years, and then I kind of got into this stuff like almost 10 years ago when I was 27 years old. And anyway, so our panel was called Otome 101. Hiroto, the celebrity from Cyber Entertainment's panel is called Otome 101 2024 edition. So I'm like, oh, LOL. So he runs the Ikemen games, or rather, I think he's in charge of localizing the Ikemen series. Ikemen is like hot anime dude basically, so like a lot of the characters in the games I play would be considered that. So like we changed it to now be I had to change the concept before I got the guarantee that it would go to print, so I wanted to keep it similar enough to where if I had a catastrophe on my hands and they only changed the title online, I could still kind of link them to each other. So I went with in the last minute I went with the Tome 102 After Dark with Your Ikemen, which is directly a nod to like Hiroto's panel. And honestly, I think I hope that like they see it and they laugh about how I'm trying to make a joke about coming after them. And like, I redid the description. I can send you guys a picture if you want, but it's just like, hey, you do not need to attend any prerequisite courses for this advanced otome lesson. This is for the adult side of the genre or whatever. And we're going to try to have a good time with it and like kind of highlight like there are a lot of indie game, like we all know that indie devs love horror, but they really loved horror in the visual novel dating game community, and they love psychological horror, and like there's a lot of dark stuff. So it's not just like some coming of age young girl Japanese thing. Like these games don't have to be like hentai games to be for adults, if that makes sense. So now my panel is going to be about, hey, otome literally means maiden in Japanese. This genre has its roots in coming of age dating games, and like at no point do they become like really porny games, but a lot of these games are made for adults, like Shun no Virch that we reviewed on the show last year. I know I'm talking a lot, I'll stop in a second, but like that game starts with like children's faces melting off and the whole game, like people are getting murdered, and like that game is messed up, and that game definitely, like, I got some panels of slides on my panel where, like, let's talk about how Virch proves that, like, this isn't for adolescents. Like, the market has changed. This is kind of, like, just, it's changed a lot in the last 20 years, so we're going to go into that and have some fun with it. I'm actually really pumped about it, and I think I have a lot more material, but, yeah, it's still exhilarating to, like, throw away something you've been working on for months and start over with just a few weeks when you're like, I've prepared for months and now I gotta, but I actually think, we're in a good place with it. So at first I was kind of having a crappy week and then I started to feel really good about it. So yeah, sorry to take up all
you
the
got
space.
This. I know you got this.
Yeah, that's
you're
wild.
Crush it.
I was messaging Joe earlier. I'm like, I'm so freaking nervous. I've never done anything like this in person, you know? And like when I posted that video, like I'm not on camera for like a reason. Like I have a lot of anxiety about that, like being in person and stuff. So it's going to be a huge challenge. I've made a lot of progress in trying to do this stuff with y'all on this podcast. I'm kind of scared of like being in person live, you know, but I'll
you'll
get some good
be fine. Beat your chest a few times. Go look here, people. I got a panel, and you're here to see it. Bite me. Have fun.
Maybe we can all do a panel one day. I'll have one under my belt experience.
I can tell you, to be perfectly honest with you, from experience, I've done many panels, and I'm always nervous before each one, without fail. But the moment it starts, you're like, let's have a ball, and then everything changes.
Sometimes I feel that way about our reviews too. Like I'll be like, oh, if I have a game I really care about, I'll have so much anxiety all day leading up to it because I want to do a good job. But as soon as the review starts, I'm like, I don't care. I'm in my zone. I'm having a good time. That's if I write notes. But like, so I'm sure it'll be like that. But everybody's like, you know, I bought the 4-day pass. I'm going to go down there and make a weekend out of it. And everybody's like, what are you doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday? I'm like, well, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I have zero plans. So whatever you guys want to do is cool. They're like, what are you doing Thursday? I'm like, I'm going to throw up all day in my hotel room until my panel at 8:30. And I'm not leaving the room. They're like, are you serious? Just walk around with it. Like, no, I'm going to be sweating and throwing up. And this is not negotiable. And you're not allowed in the room. And that's how it's going to be.
Non-negotiable.
Another trick in regards to something like how I think you operate, I think it would make sense for you too, is I have a thing where I used to do RPG panels at Anime Central, and what I used to do there was I would get ridiculous about creating not a blueprint, but like a bullet point sheet of the entire flow of the panel. Here's how this is going to go. Here's how that's going to go. And once the panel starts, the whole thing pretty much went in the trash because I didn't need it. But it was primarily because of just how people just wanted to talk shop about random stuff. And if there's anything I'm good at, it's talking shop about random stuff. So next thing I knew, I didn't need it anymore. But due to having that, that bullet point flow chart, I still felt prepared enough to say if nobody had anything to say and if nobody wanted to talk, I could talk regardless of how it goes. So maybe doing something like that, because you know your stuff. So just pull a bullet point together and say, I'm going to talk about these things. And walk in there knowing you're the authority. That's why you got the panel.
Damn. Yeah, I want to I got to pick your brain after this too. Because like I've never even attended a panel before. I've never really gone to conventions. Like I'm trying to balance
between
You know, I got an hour and a half. I want to leave 10 minutes just for like Q&A time in between. But I also want to get the audience involved. I want to have certain polarizing characters we all know and be like, how y'all feel about this guy? He's murdered thousands of people.
Fun.
I want to do stuff like that, but I want to also be able to, I want to roll in there with so much written material that I hopefully don't have to use it all. So you're speaking
easy
my
content.
Language.
Easy content. Take two characters from the game that are like, in those games, I assume you can choose a coupling, right? Like, who's the person you're going to date by the end of X game? And if you can do that, you can just have general moments where you say something like, all right, best hotness. Who's the best hotness in the game? I'm going with this dude right here. Who's for team such and such? And who's for team such and such? And watch everyone go, bullshit, he's clearly the better guy. You're like, who? Yeah. Why is he the better guy? You right there with the funny hat. Why is it the better guy? And they get up because people love to talk about themselves. They love to say stuff. So you can get people back and forth having banters. You'll have a blast.
One of my even if you don't ask people for questions, you'll see people raise their hands during your presentation asking to talk. Like, you won't even need to prompt people, and they'll be like, oh, I got shit to say.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Just go
on and know you're going to have fun. That I'm like, it will work. I'm telling you, it will work.
Plus, you
work.
Said you have giveaways, right?
Yeah, we got a few games to give away. I'm pretty excited.
Cool. Yeah, also said, that was really cool. Husband, pretty sick, yeah. If you said you're following a panel that's similar to yours from a big name, and people don't even have to leave the room to stay for yours,
no, it's in a different panel room. I think there's like 20-30 minutes between.
They would have to come like right to your room.
Where they are, I'm not really sure, but like, I don't know. If I get one thing out of like making a joke out of this, I hope the people that do that panel see it and laugh and be like, "Oh my god, this newbie just did her best over here." Like, I hope they see my video and they're like, "LOL, she's make like." When Ickman in my name is a direct nod to them, like, "Hey, I know even more than you guys know about this fucked up shit. Come see me if you want a little more advanced lesson." And like, obviously I don't feel that way about myself, but I even put a winky emoji in there, and like, I'm clearly going to make it really silly. And like, I don't know. I feel like it's a panel I would want to go to, but
I mean,
sounds sweet.
Having come from the other side of that, you know, I've done like a totally, you know, almost empty room kind of panel and still had a lot of fun. So it's going to be awesome no matter what, I think.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, I've done panels where it was basically just friends, and it was like pity attendance.
Mine was 10 people I didn't know.
Whoa! It still ends up being fun.
Yeah,
that's the other big, most important part to note too. You go on there hoping you get a lot of people, but not expecting it. That way, you tow both ends of the spectrum. You're not going there rating to get like 50,000, like, you know, 100 people, you end up with 25. You're like,
as long as it goes well,
all you gotta do is imagine everybody in their underwear and you're set.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
No, I don't know about that.
The classic.
It is a classic. It is a classic. But then you end up backfiring. You're like, crap, I'm in my underwear too. Oh, no.
In this age of like, in this age of like AI giving like the worst advice, that picture people in their underwear thing sounds like an AI suggestion.
Oh, my God.
I'm on Reddit.
Like, of course you wouldn't care, you damn
now
robot.
AI's fucked up. I would say the best advice I could give is do this panel for you, not for the audience. Make sure you're having fun with what you're doing. Because if you're having fun, the energy will just bleed off you onto everyone else. And everyone else will have a good time.
As a general live performer of many years, I guess the thing I would say is that no matter what happens, it's part of the show. Like, you don't have to apologize for like anything that happens. It's all part of the show, because it will be, because you know what people will remember of what happens is part of the thing. So, you know, it's best to own that, and like, you know, that's it makes for a more entertaining way of like dealing with things than to be worried or stress out like publicly, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as I do a good enough job where like nobody gets pissed off and the staff might even have me back again one day, like I'll be happy. Like, it's my first time. I just don't want it to go up in flames. And like, I want to make some memories and be like, man, even if I never do something like this again, it's like, man, I got to do this thing.
Hell yeah.
I got to nerd out in front of everybody,
all about.
Also, keep in mind, just because you'll do it in a few weeks doesn't mean you won't get to do it again. Don't sell yourself short. Yeah. You might come out of this going, you know what, I had a ball. And next year it's going to be even better.
Yeah.
Or Acolyte is saying, if you aren't comfortable with public speaking, I recommend watching Amy Cuddy's TED Talk. And then better to laugh at yourself than become more nervous. I think that's good advice too.
I like that concept.
Cool, writing that down. Thank you. Thank you, Hor.
That's a very good idea.
I would say that's a lot more entertaining than my week has been. The highlight of my week is that we got a cat treadmill and none of the goddamn cats will step on the thing.
Specifically for cats?
It's like it's a wheel. It's like a bigger hamster wheel. Basically to keep your fat ass cats moving.
But what would make a cat want to get on it? I figure if anything, maybe like, okay, there's no reward at the end of this thing. I just perpetual motion with no benefit.
They just want to get energy out and exercise.
They'll just run around the house, won't they?
Not always. Or if they do have energy, they might go after each other. So if we could divert their energy into something like this, that could cut down on cat fights.
Cut down on cat fights. I don't have I've never had a cat treadmill, but I often wonder, I wonder if there is a way that people typically get their cats to walk on those things.
We're trying to figure it out. We're using laser pointers. We're using catnip. We're using treats and they'll step on it. And as soon as it moves, they're like, whoa, fuck this.
I wonder.
So
dangle a hot dog over it or something. Cats are into hot dogs, right?
Maybe. I have no clue.
Just try a plate of pancakes.
Predator is.
Hey.
Predator. Anything.
As an up-and-coming Joe myself, I'm now thinking about, cat strategies, all the time.
What are you up to now?
You're trying to double-digit cats?
I mean, I'm very far away from being a Joe, but I'm a starter. I'm closer to, not closer to, but, huh?
Don't give up.
Thank you.
Go mini.
Don't stop now.
Yay. We'll see how many strays are around in the new place.
Oh, man. Anyway, is there anything else anyone wanted to chat about, or should we dive into reviews?
What are the Mountain Dews you were talking about, man?
Oh, the three new Mountain Dews. Yeah. For the summer, they have three new ones. It's Liberty Chill, which is, if you remember, Liberty Brew from a couple years ago, the 50 flavors in one.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I had forgotten the name of it, but that's what I remember, the drink.
Yeah, they just re-released it,
but they changed the name of it.
Yeah. Then they have a Star Spangled Splash, which is a combination of red berries. I thought it was a bit strong. I thought the flavor on that one was a bit strong.
Red berries, just red berries.
Yep. Red berries.
Mm-hmm. And then Freedom Fusion Lemonade White Peach.
That one sounds like the best one.
Oh, it is so good. It is delicious. I want to get more of that.
Who would have thought they come up with so many ways to combine liquid syrupy sugar
to
come up with new flavors like this?
And they're red, white, and blue. So there you go.
Remember years ago, back in the day, where the only flavors we had were the regular one and Code Red? And then when Live Wire came out, people lost their damn mind because, oh my God, a third Mountain Dew? That's crazy.
What about Baja Blast? You guys remember when that first dropped at Taco Bell?
Yeah, now it's a permanent flavor.
Bonkers for that.
Dude, right?
Have I not told you that story? We don't have time for this right now. Damn it.
What story?
I was there the night that they brought Baja Blast to Taco Bell. I was working at Taco Bell in high school the night they brought it in.
I remember this. Yeah.
Was there a riot? Part of my lore. Did anybody lose an arm?
It was at Ground Zero.
Nah, we gotta save. I already told y'all a 20-minute story. We gotta save this for next time. Be like Brooke, Grandma Brooke. Tell us about the night that they brought Mountain Dew.
So is what you're saying that we're about to institute Grandma Brooke story time every episode? Yeah. You gotta have a new story to tell.
Wow, yo, I was there when they brought in the cinnamon twist. I was there for the cinnamon twist. I was there for the Baja Blast. Anyway,
man,
yeah, we'll talk about it.
What a time.
There for amazing
the cinnamon,
times.
There for the cinnamon blast, too.
What a time to be alive.
Now you've gone too far. Get out.
All right. What a time to be alive.
So yeah, the white one, Freedom Fusion, that's the good one.
Thanks.
Drive through for walking. That's the best. Not for fancy walking.
Freedom
anyway,
Fusion.
Should we get to reviews?
Yeah.
Only the sidewalk for walking, not for fancy walking.
All right, let's get to these. We have five games to talk about tonight. First one, Dark Envoy Director's Cut, developed and published by Event Horizon. Released back in October on Steam for $29.99. The Director's Cut update released May 14th. Lead a party of relic hunters in an epic adventure set in a conflict-torn guns and sorcery world. Experiment and think outside the box to overcome the odds stacked against you. Purnell, what is Dark Envoy Director's Cut?
Without going into the narrative, because I'm doing that thing where you kind of hop from just narrative bit to narrative bit and just playing the game, I do know that you play a spunky pair of brother and sister named Malachi and Kayla. And essentially, they're like relic hunters in this crazy world where it seems like they're like on a space planet where humans have migrated to it. And as a result, now they're trying to get by and make a living on said planet. And the adventures that take place there, as we described there, which, if you want to follow the narrative, go for it. Life has been in such a way where my brain doesn't stick with stories very well lately. But what they can stick with is gameplay, because I do like checking boxes and clicking buttons and, you know, making decisions. And that game, this game has that in spades in a sense, too. This plays like a classic computer-style RPG, one of which I haven't played such a style of in a long time, actually. Think games like Fallout 2, where your party members are on a map and you can kind of click your party members as a group or individually. You can click them to make them move their locations on the map, position them behind cover for battle situations where they can have to avoid damage and such. The works. And I'll talk about how the battle systems and all that works eventually. But yeah, it's a computer-based RPG. You can control a party of multiple characters. You start with two. You can get up to about four per party setup. And you'll be manipulating them all kind of in tandem. There is a sort of autonomous battle system that you can activate for your characters if you want to while skirmishes are happening, but I didn't really feel like dealing with that because I'm too meticulous about what I want people to do. So in regards to that, I prefer the method of what usually happens, which is you'll be exploring a map. Click a set of groups, make you guys move along the map by clicking along. But the moment you come into view of an enemy unit, you'll immediately go into combat mode. And based on what you have your character set up to do, will determine how they react from the start. If you do literally nothing, the enemies will approach you and the skirmish will just kind of begin, whether your guys are moving towards them or not. However, you hit the space bar, the game will go into a tactical pause state. Sometimes it can be really slow, but you can also set it to just outright stop the action while you go in tactical mode. I don't see why in the world you'd want it to not stop, because it's better to actually be able to have time to make decisions and swap between characters, but you do you. While it's paused, you're able to make a number of calls. You can have characters move to specific locations on the board. You can have them find cover on the board if need be. You can also activate a series of skills they could have equipped. Skills are learned by leveling up, and they can be either passive buffs, which you don't have to use, or they can be outright abilities that you could activate on the field. They have cooldown times and also mana costs. Even melee characters have mana as far as their, you know, cost of usage of abilities. And they range in a variety of different ways. You get, like, you know, basic things like, you know, super attacks that do X number of damage. But there's also some pretty unique ones, like you can summon golems onto the floor, the board. That will, to do some cool effects, like attack for you, absorb damage for you. There's an interesting thing, which I don't think I've ever seen one of these games do, where sometimes you can place, like, a barrier down on the board or have an attack that kind of flows out like a wave. But in this game, if the attack is built for it, you can actually click on the board and kind of drag a line to determine the path that it does. So, like, you want to be like a
fall
shield
into
you
the abyss
and build a wall
of my gaping butthole.
Kind of make a specific pattern for you, or you can do like a wave of like vines and have the vines travel a specific path, which is kind of cool. But skirmish is kind of flowing that manner where you're just burning through skills, you know, giving yourself defensive buffs, attack buffs. There's other things you can do where you can utilize the environment as well in some of these battles, like hacking turrets or utilizing basically explosive barrels and other actions, which makes it so that the levels themselves are fairly tactical. It's not just our guys beat up your guys. You have a lot of decisions to make while you're playing these levels, to the point where you want to make just decisions. Unlike my usual style, I play this on normal difficulty, so I'm not going to go so far to say whether the game is easy or not, but I will tell you this. Based on the challenge I had on normal mode, you won't catch me going higher than that. I like where I'm at, where it's nice and comfortable. And yeah, I feel like it would have been tough if I went higher. Like where it was, there were definitely times where either I didn't, the controls were doing what I wanted them to do because I would want a guy to go over here, but he runs over there because I didn't properly do the emphasis on where you wanted him to go, stuff like that. And it would result in some oof and mistakes. Though, fortunately, though, reviving this game doesn't require an item. It can be done at the end of a skirmish, and your characters, if they're still alone. If you ever had a total party wipe, your characters will just get back up. And also, well, they'll give up with like limited health, mind you. But also, you can get people up by getting one of your characters to walk over to a down person and just kind of revive them on the field, which I kind of like quite a bit. Whether that's a thing in the higher difficulties, I don't know. But again, you'll never find me finding out because screw that noise. As you level up your character, you can gain access to new skills and abilities. You can allocate stat points to your characters. You know, typical traits like, I don't know, endurance and mana abilities and like. But this game has something pretty cool in regards to how the class system works, where at the beginning of the game, for your two mains, you can choose from one of four classes. Once you choose that class, each of those classes also has subclasses associated with them. And once you reach a certain level, you can choose one of those subclasses to get a brand new thing of passive abilities and attack abilities that you can spend skill points to learn as well. Unfortunately, you're kind of limited to how many you can have equipped, so you have to be smart about which ones you use and which ones you don't use. And then eventually, you can actually do it one more time to get a little bit more. You can get like just the attack abilities if you want to use those. So it gives you a bit of a choice where you have to decide, of the types that are available, what one seems the most gel with your playstyle. Sometimes the idea will become, you know, make your two main characters have, you know, classes that complement each other. And then based on how you play up until level 7, you know, you'll be able to, by the time you get to level 7, you'll be like, okay, well, I like doing this kind of thing and make this guy do that. So maybe this subclass is the right subclass for me because it gels more with my playstyle. But it's an interesting decision to make. There's also item crafting in the game. And that's based on, like, you know, how much loot you've got or the type of loot you've got and how much you want to invest in different items. But, you know, that's up to you at that point to play. But I feel like the game's pretty fun. My one big gripe in a sense, though it's not even really a big gripe, it's just a bit of a gripe, is that it's fairly linear. There are some things you can do as you play through the game where you can kind of like take breaks to do like quick, you know, challenge quests or to go to like random dungeons to kind of build yourself up. But for the most part, as far as progressing through the narrative is concerned, it's pretty much story beat after story beat after story beat. But by the same token, if you're the type of person who's never got, is always low on free time and is constantly in need of just moving forward in their games and not getting sidetracked, well, guess what? Papa's made a new best friend in, you know, Dark Envoy in that regard. So I feel like all in all, I do think the game is enjoyable. It carves a niche in a genre that has not really saw fit in a long time, I think, or gameplay style that I've come across in a long time. Oh, one more thing I should mention that I didn't dig, but it may just be because of the laptop I was using, which combines to another thing I didn't like. There were times where the cinema scenes would have character speech kind of overlap, like the guy may go, I'm going to go to the mall. And then by basically repeating a statement over and over again, I'm not sure if that was like my laptop or a game performance thing, but just felt I'd mention it anyway, just in case. And of course, the other thing that just made me genuinely sad, no Steam Deck. Don't bother with it. It's a waste of your time. Do not play this game on your Steam Deck. I was extremely saddened by that, and it definitely limited my ability to get down and play this game because, you know, I'm a Steam Deck guy. I played it at the hospital. I played it at work. I played it everywhere. So being told, you got to sit at your computer to play. Oh, boy. Fit that into my life. No one told me there'd be work involved here. But, yeah. It's don't bother buying this if you need it on a Steam Deck. But if you're not buying on a Steam Deck and you want to play on a PC, I think it's worth enough time to try to give it a shot and see what you think of it. Especially if you're long for the days of, like, you know, classic games, the Divinities, the Fallouts. What's that game? That freaking Icewind Dale. Like, games like that. So, I'm done rambling now.
Well, Dark Envoy Director's Cut clocks in at $29.99. What is your official verdict?
I think it's worth a buy. It's a lot. It's a good time.
Very good. Sounds good. Next game.
That's why I said buy it.
Next game, Nine Souls, developed and published by Red Candle Games, released May 29th on Steam for $29.99. Nine Souls is a lore-rich, hand-drawn 2D action platformer featuring Sekiro-inspired deflection-focused combat. Embark on a journey of Eastern fantasy, explore the land once home to an ancient alien race, and follow a vengeful hero's quest to slay the Nine Souls, formidable rulers of this forsaken realm. Andy, tell us about your time with Nine Souls.
So at first glance, I was blown away by the hand-drawn art style. The mix of Asian fantasy with muted colors against anime-esque landscapes is so beautiful in this game. The blend of cold machinery, ancient temples, beautiful peach blossom fields, all the colors contrast so nicely. It makes each scene just captures all the emotion behind each scene. It's amazing. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy.
The art style,
kind of like the muted tones, you know, that he uses a lot, like kind of reminded me of that a lot. So I'm drawn into games, you know, I'm a sucker for Metroidvanias, but I'm also drawn into games with just awesome art styles. So this one was amazing. And Red Candle Games even incorporated like Japanese manga inspired cutscenes and like imagery into certain story aspects, which was I thought like a really nice way to kind of break up the story from just like dialogue too, and really put it in there as like almost like a shocking scene, you know.
Hey kids.
It was just really cool to see those kind of like new storytelling elements in a game like this too. The story itself isn't anything like super groundbreaking, but they do a good job of telling the story. Without giving too much away, the main character Yi is on a vengeful quest against the Nine Souls, the rulers of the sacred realm of Solarians, who are an advanced alien race from which Yi was ungracefully cast away. He is then found by a young human, or as they refer to him, ape man, child named Xuan Xuan, I think I'm saying that right, who helps Yi recover from his wounds. And throughout the story, Xuan Xuan acts as kind of the happy-go-lucky, you know, inquisitive counterpart to Yi's cold, kind of anti-hero character, you know. Xuan Xuan and Yi kind of grow together too through the story, introducing Xuan Xuan to kind of the more futuristic world that just kind of lay out of his sight, you know. And the story starts a little bit slow, kind of picks up after the first biome, and has kind of some very like emotional ties to like certain characters and things, you know, that go on throughout it. Gameplay. It's kind of another mix of like new approaches towards like familiar settings. Very smooth controls, fast-paced combat. It's a lot of like patience, and with the almost like Asian aesthetic to it, it's like patience and beauty like mixed together really well. Utilizing quick parry techniques alongside mythical moves such as the Ki Blast and the Bow Strike. There's a whole list of really cool like parry mechanics and things like in it, but Red Candle Games actually also said in an interview that their parry technique was heavily inspired by Sekiro, and then they kind of take it a step further too to include different attacks using almost like a similar but different kind of parry system. Along, it's interesting. Not only does it have smooth controls and kind of cool like battle scenes and like fights and things like that, new moves are also discovered along the journey to kind of help you traverse new locations. And a detailed map is unlocked through exploration as well. And you can pick up these little keys that kind of unlock areas of the map as well that show off if you've gotten all the secrets and all the treasures, so you can go through and get that 100% run. Some items are obtained through progression and can be upgraded by NPCs. There's a lot of little NPCs like you meet along the journey, which makes exploration very important. You want to go back and like try to get as much as you can, because it's going to help you on your journey a lot. It's got solid battle mechanics, but also some very interesting like platforming and puzzle solving techniques used in it. As you progress, the platforming gets more and more difficult, and the puzzle solving gets more and more difficult. It's nice, but it is a little surprising in a game. Usually Metroidvanias like use the new skill, but this definitely uses all the skills that you've obtained up to that point to progress through an area, which I really liked. I hate getting a move that I use like once or twice, you know, and then never again. It's got a clever leveling system that also plays a part in it. You can upgrade the effectiveness of specific skills, and also like there's optional abilities too. So you don't necessarily have to go a certain direction and unlock everything if you don't want to. Oh, and there's I forgot about this too. As far as the like puzzle stuff goes, there's kind of a hacking system. So you don't really have like keys for doors. You have to find like the pathway to that door. And so sometimes you have to traverse, sometimes you have to come back from like another biome or like area that you've been in before. You also have like this little familiar that kind of follows you around, and you can fly it to a certain distance to unlock a door, and use like this hacking system, which is just like a quick like D-pad control button mash, you know. But it's different every time too. So I thought that was kind of a neat addition to the like the lock and key style of like most Metroidvanias. Enemies are tough. Enemies are really tough. As goes with a game with a parry system, all the enemies' move sets need to be learned in order to like have any chance of surviving. This really like kind of pushes forward the frustrating elements of Souls-likes. like all the battles, fighting an enemy, losing to an enemy, getting sent back like further than you would like, only to fall again to a different enemy on the way back to like pick up all your stuff. I love Souls-likes, but I hate that aspect every single time. And so I definitely had to put this game down a couple of times just to kind of like cool my head through that, you know. But it is fun, and that's always countered to by like the rewarding feeling you get from like beating those enemies, you know, and these crazy bosses, you know. And each what was nice was like each boss felt like different, you know. I've played a couple of Souls-likes recently that all the bosses felt like they have the same movesets, you know. And this was like different and special in each fight, you know. but honestly, I could go on and on about this game. It was really good. If I were to like recommend it to somebody who was into that kind of style, you know, like I would say like imagine Metroid and Sekiro had a baby, and then like that baby flew to Asia and then had another baby with Hollow Knight. And
LOL. Oh my god. I love that.
It sounds like you enjoyed this one. So $29.99, what is your official verdict on Nines?
I did actually really like it. I'm still playing it. I've got like secrets and treasures to like go back through and like find and all this stuff. And I would say honestly at $30, like there's a lot of content here, between the art style and the battle mechanics. You're gonna have a good time with it. And plus if it's like too hard for you, there's also a way to kind of dial it back too. And you can just do like a story mode and just enjoy this emotional bond between Yi and Xuan Xuan, and like learn all the ins and outs of like the Solarians and their history and lore and stuff like that. There's a lot going on in this game. I think they did a really good job. I'd recommend it.
Very cool. All right. Well, Andy, that is it for you. You gonna stick around or are you heading out?
I'm gonna head out, but I'm gonna listen to the rest of it too. I'm working on a few things and I gotta go meet with the family here shortly.
Thank you as always for joining us and hanging out. Do you have any final words before you head out?
I mean, thank you guys. It's always good to catch up with you guys, hear what you guys have been up to lately. I don't know. Just hope everybody has a good week, you know, and enjoy those games.
We gotta talk Hellboy sometime.
Definitely talk. I didn't know you were a Hellboy fan too. I love Hellboy so much. I even bought the Mike Mignola documentary that came out. I kickstarted that. Yeah.
If you love him so much, why don't you marry him?
I would. That'd be great.
You would be a wonderful husband and father. What are you talking about?
I'd cook every night. I'd clean. I'd take care of everything for him. Just so he can make more
art. He's so lucky.
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
You can stay a Hellboy as long as you want. You don't have to become a Hellman on my watch. You can stay Hellboy, baby.
Never become a Hellman. Only Hellboy. Hell yeah, dudes. Kick ass.
Hell yeah, later. Brother.
I like Kick-Ass also, so got a lot of good taste over here. Kick-Ass, Hellboy, shit.
All right, moving on. Dragon is Dead, developed by Team Sun Eat, published by PM Studios, released June 7th on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Dragon is Dead is a hack-and-slash roguelite action platformer, offers tons of customization, fun with different character skill trees and legendary equipment. Overcome repeated deaths to defeat Gurinin, the leader of the Dark Dragons. Purnell, what is Dragon is Dead?
So, Dragon is Dead is... Also, by the way, those multiple deaths, I did not overcome. But I did experience a couple, so that's good enough for me. Dragon is Dead takes place in, you guessed it, a war-torn, disturbing world where everything's crap, and you're trying to prevent it from getting even crappier. In my case, I did so as a Spellblade. That's one of the characters you get to choose from as you play through this game. As you start out, you have your basic attack and your jump, as well as a dash and a double jump. I kind of like the game outright by default gives you this double jump ability. You start out in a particular village where you'll also be treating as your hub. That will get bigger and offer you more of services as the game progresses and as you unlock more things. But after you leave there, you'll be presented with a map. And this map will show you the trajectory of your journey. You cannot veer away from that. You just will show you how far you've gone. Think like the old like Ghosts and Goblins map where it showed you you're here. You're eventually going to go there. Good luck getting there, though. Then once you choose a location or the first location, you'll be presented with the gameplay. It's 2D side scrolling, hack and slasher. At the offset, you just have your basic abilities, but as you level up, you'll gain access to modifiers to your basic attack, as well as some new abilities that you can assign to button skills to, play about your character. And in regards to this, as you play through, you'll be in a place in a fairly small-ish map environment. Your goal being to get from the beginning to the end of the level. Enemies will sometimes be present on the level, but in other times they may also just kind of spawn at the most inconvenient times and cause you grief. If you do decide to dodge enemies while you are fighting them, you do get access to a sort of like a dodge frame invincibility state, which is convenient for that because you will be doing that a lot. Attacking these enemies is also fairly convenient in this game because I'm not sure if every character does this, but I like the fact that when I hit the attack, but I don't have to mash it. If you just hold the attack button down, your character is going to just maintain their combo string until you decide to let go of it. So if you happen to have a controller that's seen some beat-ups or your Steam Deck has seen better days, well, it's going to have a little bit longer time in this life because you're not mashing in this game so much as timing your attacks, your button presses. In the event you manage
speaking of timing, I got to sneak in here quick. Duck Duck Noose just donated $5. Thank you so much for the donation. And then
for a name like Duck Duck Noose, I appreciate that.
Then Shih Tzu on You, I believe, subbed, but I didn't get a notification for it, so I can't tell for sure. Trash Rando did the same thing before the show, and no notification. So Twitch, what's going on with your notifications?
Just because his name is Trash Rando doesn't mean he's a Trash Rando. He deserves respect and notification privileges.
Exactly.
Yeah, only we get to call him that.
I think everyone calls him Trash Rando.
I won't in a mean way. I'll do it in a fun way.
Well, thank you everyone for your donations and subs. Back on track, Dragon is Dead. Sorry for interrupting. What were you saying?
It's okay. Now I want a sub, so thanks for that.
subs.
Where was I? So, in the event that you manage to kill every enemy on a map screen, you'll be presented with a reward being that of 2 treasure chests. These treasure chests can contain a number of different categories of items, whether it be an artifact, which presents you with, different buffs that you can have that makes your character a little bit better. Though I like that the buffs in this game come in two forms. One, they do
like, you know, just basic things like, hey, if you put this on, you'll get like 15% hit point bonus and like this much to damage resistance, blah, blah, blah. But it also has a symbology similar to a game I reviewed ages ago called like Vivid Knight, where each relic or each artifact also has symbols associated with it. And if you get enough symbols of one type across your different artifacts, you'll get passive additional buffs from that. So you won't be choosing artifacts solely based on this gives me XYZ, but you'll also be going, well, it gives me these symbols, and these symbols will give me these other buffs, which might make this other kind of weak buff, you know, not inconsequential by comparison, because I get this better thing by taking this. You might get currency. Currency is used, well, I'll get to that in a minute. And you know, aside from that, like you might find, you know, just, you know, items or weapons or things like that. So you'll progress. You'll go from screen to screen. Sometimes you'll come across scenes that have events on, like NPCs you'll talk to, NPCs that might be associated with town-related quests that might get you new NPCs in town that gives you new amenities and things of that nature. And then eventually you're going to get to the first boss who's going to mud stomp you into oblivion and you come back a few times with more buffs and take him out with a better understanding of the game. But when you die, it's not all that is lost. You lose your levels and you lose, it's hard to say, like you lose all your skill points, but your inventory remains unscarred. Like all your items you collected and your equipment is still stays with you. And also your currency stays with you. You can take that currency back to town. If you've unlocked them by then, you can actually use the currency to unlock artifacts, use that currency to unlock new items and equipment that scales with the level of your character. I want to say scaled based on like maybe the one of the max levels you've reached them. I'm not quite sure what determines the level that the merchants are selling to you, are selling items to you at, but I knew that they do that. And then you basically wash, rinse, repeat, and do it again. So the things I will say about this game that I know are specifically cool in my opinion are the music. I think the music is delightfully dreadful, and I say that in a good way. It does a good job capturing the atmosphere of the world you're playing in, but it also isn't grating to the ears. It actually is nice to listen to, especially the town music. I will say I like the graphics in this game. I like the fluid animation the characters have associated with them, same for the enemies. I do wish, however, that it was easier sometimes to note when enemies are going to attack you, because when the chaos is striking, like you're beating a guy up with your sword attack, and you don't know if you're flinching him or not, and then suddenly, bam, you get stabbed. You're like, how did I get stabbed? Because it was hard to tell if he was about to do something in all the chaos of the attack animations. So that could just be me. Someone else might play this game and go, whoop, no, I can totally tell what he's doing. And good on you. But I wanted to mention that. Aside from that, though, I feel like the only thing I might not have going for so much is that I felt like it felt like, I mean, I guess it's early access, what I've been told, which means that there is more to come. But it did feel like, nah, it was fun. I'm not going to judge it for like been there, done that. I'm enjoying the game as I'm playing it. And I did come back for multiple runs. It wasn't like me going, well, time to put this bird to rest. I actually felt looking forward to coming back for another run. And given my current state of mind these days, this game scratches that itch perfectly. I can get in, get a run, die, come back, try again, maybe a little stronger, a little more knowledgeable without overcompensating for, like, you know, needing a base of knowledge from it. It's just a good time. I enjoyed this game. Then again, PM Studios published it. They generally don't do bad at selecting games to publish, so I'll give them that credit too. I look forward to seeing where this game goes and see what they do with it beyond this state. I hope that the skill trees become a little more exciting for the Spellblade. Maybe I'll just get better and see what the real fuss is, because give you some context, the Spellblade skill tree, again, that's the character I primarily played as. They have multiple tiers of skills. Like there's like a base set, they call them core skills, and then they have like mastery skills, which come after you've unlocked a certain number of the core skill items. And with this character, you base your skill point spends on one of three elements: fire, electricity, and ice. And depending on what you decide to spend your skill points on, that will pretty much determine what your attack style is. But I did enjoy making my core attack the lightning version, which gave you dazing and jolting, which stuns enemies and also causes electrical currents to travel between enemies for damage. But then used my mastery skill to be a fireball in the fire element, which let me throw fireballs that exploded and took people out. So they give you a bit to play with there, but I look forward to seeing what more they can do to make the skill selection a little bit more exciting in this regard. But overall,
We shall see how it progresses. It is an early access game. They plan to be in early access for about a year. The final version, they plan to add extra chapters with extra characters, legendary equipment, and unique enemies. The price does plan to go up as content is added for the final release. So they say jump in now to get it at $20. What do you think? Is what's your verdict there?
I think it's a genuine try it on this regard. I mean, I always say try it in the sense because I don't know what they're going to add. I mean, you know, timelines or whatever they call those things, message lines, whatever. It's hard to tell sometimes what they truly will deliver. So I hate going based off of those promises. I do feel as though the gameplay loop right now is fun too. Like, you'll spend some hours trying to finish this game off in its current state. And I do feel like, even though I myself haven't gotten to the end of it yet, I do feel that you will get $20 of value out of it if you enjoy it like I did.
Very cool. And if you pick it up in the next day or so until the 14th, it's $17.99. So give yourself a couple of pennies. Next game, Fireside, developed by Emergo Entertainment, published by Nord Current Labs, released June 4th on Steam for $14.99. Fireside is an uplifting narrative experience about a journey and the breaks that follow it. Make friends, trade and chat at the campfire, weave connections, and explore a serene, magic-filled world. Brooke, what is going on in Fireside?
That's really neat. It's got a bit of a pen and paper RPG feel. Combines tabletop exploration campaign feel with a little bit of board game feel plus some video game feel. I'll explain each of those claims I'm making. But first I'm going to describe the premise of the game real quick.
We're up in our feels.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm deep in my feels. Y'all know me.
Yeah.
Speaking of feels, I got some feels because Latino Heat just subbed, and that one did alert me. And I'm confused with the alerts now. Why did BX's alert go off and no one else's had? I don't understand what's going on.
The best.
And it wasn't the Purnell clip either. I don't know what's going on with my alerts.
It's crazy.
Oh, it hurts.
Summertime heat. Latino Heat kicking in.
Anyway, Fireside, sorry to derail things so quickly.
No problem. Premise of the game, you get to choose your name at the beginning, but that's about it. The rest isn't customizable. You come out, I guess it's supposed to be an androgynous sprite and kind of like a spacesuit looking outfit where I guess you could be a dude or a lady. All you really know about your situation, well, the game opens up and it starts out with just pen and paper. Well, I don't know if they use pen. Literally pieces of paper come up on the screen with drawings and handwriting. There's a bunch of waves and lightning and a storm is kind of drawn out in scribbly pictures. The words "a stormy night" are at the top of one of the pieces of paper. Underneath it says, "The ocean's stormy tonight. The roar of waves filled the air and the thunder rumbles in the distance. A small lifeboat is dancing on top of the angry waves." Y'all guessed it. We're in that lifeboat. So we hit continue. We're on page 2. The pages shuffle around, make a rustling sound. As we read the words on the page, the sound of a pencil scribbling furiously across paper is going on. And that sound's going to continue in the game. We find ourselves inside a lifeboat, battling our way towards the shore amid the rolling tempest. I'm just reading from the game now. Behind you, the remains of your ship are slowly sinking to the ocean floor. Now we gotta click a button that says row faster. That's the only option we have. Your lifeboat groans as under the strain of the waves, but by the time you realize it's breaking apart, you've already been thrown into the ocean swallowing cold, salty water. We still only got one option. We're gonna click it. It says swim. Pieces of wood and lost goods are floating all around you, and you reach for the thing nearest to you. It is... Now we got our first choice. We can choose a splintered timber beam or an old burlap sack. I chose the beam.
Burlap sack!
I went for the beam. And now I wonder about that sack. I'm going to be doing a second playthrough to see what happens. So I cling to the timber beam. Purnell grabs the burlap sack and sinks to the ocean floor. We never see him again. No, I'm pretty sure you live if you pick that, but I'm curious. And I'm paddling through the waves with the wood to support me. I managed to keep paddling, eventually reaching the shore. Now I still only have one option again. I gotta crawl up the beach. With fading strength, you crawl up on the beach, away from the angry ocean. You collapse on the sand. Once you're safe, exhaustion overwhelming you. The world goes black. And at this point, the paper goes away. The world really does go black. When it opens back up, we can see the moon and a speech bubble because someone is talking to us. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? I hear you. You can say, I hear you. You can say, 5 more minutes, please. You can say, my head hurts. Or you can say nothing. Which I guess is what Purnell is saying because he's dead with his little sack on the bottom of the oven floor. God rest his beautiful soul. So I said, yes, I can hear you because I'm polite. And he's like, hey, that's good. Get up, get up. Now we can open our eyes and we can see we're at, wait for it, a campfire. Fireside, if you will. Now the person talking to us is a crazy looking MFer with some tangled hair and a huge beard, and his clothes appear to be a barrel. He's barefoot and it's starting to sink in here. Yo, we wash up on an island and this island may not be like super advanced. You start talking to him about the last thing you remember, which is grabbing onto that board and not the burlap sack. He goes, man, wow, lucky. I wish I'd had a board back when I washed up here. That would have helped me out a lot. Hold on to that because it's worth a lot around here. You're like, damn. And you're like, oh, thanks, I will. I was actually a merchant in my life before I washed up here. Maybe I could sell this thing. He's like, yeah, that's real good. We could use a merchant around here. This island may not seem like much, but we got a bunch of campfires around here. And yada, yada, yada. Not world-breaking explanation of how those are our save points. And even though we don't have money around here per se, we basically feel like you should be going around trading with everybody you meet at these firesides. So here's where the game starts to remind me of a board game and also a tabletop role-playing campaign. This game has arts, it's got sprites, backgrounds, but it's like really heavy on the simple symbols, and like the map you explore is pretty pared down art-wise. Lots of little representative art. And even though it does have kind of an open world thing going on where your character isn't, you know, confined to a track or roads, it can move off the path. It can kind of go anywhere you want when you're in the exploring phase, but you're always really trying to just get to the next campfire. So it also kind of doesn't matter where you wander, even though you have free reign during those exploring phases. Before you get to your next objective, you can actually interact with on the map. That feels tabletop campaign-y to me and board game-y to me. Its aesthetic just speaks more to board game than video game to me. Though to be sure, it's doing things you can only do this way, especially with like a single-player experience in video games. The tabletop exploration feel... have y'all ever explored like a literal map as part of a tabletop RPG campaign? Like maybe some Dungeons and Dragons. Not all D&D campaigns have maps, but I've played some campaigns with maps where you're pointing to an item and you're trying to get to the next city. Have y'all played like that before?
I haven't.
I'm not sure I've experienced what you're describing, but I have experienced games where you're actually looking at a map on the table and you're trying to chart a course based on what the person drew out.
Well, I guess if you have had an experience like this, then you know that when Joe read that description, well, let me scroll up to see exactly what that description was really quick. Like, make friends, trade, and chat at the campfire. It's an experience about a journey and the breaks that follow it. That really started sinking in home to me, furiously scrolling back down to the part of my notes I was actually at. Because to me, like, I have played GURPS games. I played like some Vikings themes games where we're really exploring. We're like charting a course and having a ship, but it really like the game's role playing really takes place when we are on those breaks in towns and villages, or like we're all around like a campfire or in some king's castle and we're having to like socialize with people. It's in those like stops on the journey. I don't know where the real game playing happens. And that's what it's like in this game too. And that's also because you're trading. It's a trading game too. Let me talk about why this game reminds me of like a video game feel finally too, before I talk about some more mechanics of this game and we wrap up. First of all, of course, what makes this a video game and not a board game, the IRL experience, tabletop experiences. We're experiencing this with animation. We've got background music. We've got sound effects. Although to note, whenever you're exploring the map or you're talking to a new NPC and making conversation choices, we still get that pencil writing on paper sound each time. So we're always kind of calling back to what I'm assuming, you know, that's the game's opening, but it's also the dev's roots and the nostalgic narrative building experience from all our past they're trying to like reference here. Trading in this game is really cool. You walk up to an NPC. There's a bunch of different NPCs at almost every fireside you can visit. And at night you can trade with people and you're going to have to do like, hey, I baked a loaf of bread, but I need 2 screws and like some boards. Are you going to trade with me? And the way that you can try to figure out, a few games do this, but I hadn't seen games do it in such a board gamey feel that I saw this game do. We have plenty of trading games, but we have literal like physical scales and we balance the items on the scales that kind of go back and forth like a seesaw. And everybody's scales are different depending on what they like. And you can kind of see what items the NPCs might enjoy. Like, you might have some sugar cubes or like some coconut milk you made from a coconut tree. And one guy doesn't care about the coconut milk, but the other guy would trade you like half his junk for that milk because he really, really wants that. So you're kind of going on this back and forth. Like, you put a few items from your stash and your inventory onto the scale, and you can interact with their stash and you can take things over, and you sort of like him and haw until the scales are pretty much evenly balanced. And you think that you want to pull the trade right when it's balanced, but then the game explains to you like, hey, you know, try to get a fair deal for yourself. But if you ever trade in a way that comes out a little bit in the other person's favor than yours, like the scales are tipped a little bit in their favor, maybe you gave them a little bit too much, that'll give you karma. And if you end a trade with a little bit extra karma, you either give somebody a really good deal or you just throw them some free shit, a couple free items. The NPCs will give you some hearts, and it's like positive energy they can give you. And you're kind of wondering, what do I do with that? Is that kind of just going to make a difference in the ending of the game? But it comes up later. But let's talk about a couple features of the game. Accessibility is really good. I think anybody could roll in and play this. From the very beginning of the game to the point where I stopped playing it and was like, I got my review. I think a kid could play this, and this would be an amazing game for kids. If I had a kid, I would really want them to play this. I think it's awesome. Because it's wholesome. It's a really good introduction to a lot of these concepts. Even if that kid has never played a tabletop board game or never did pen and paper RPGs like we did when we were kids, like, I just think this game does a great job explaining itself, and its tutorials are really quick because the game is so pared down like a simple board game. And I found that, you know, I could figure out how to use it without a tutorial if I was using mouse and keyboard, or if I have my controller plugged in. I use my PS4 controller that I plugged into my PC to play this on Steam a lot, and it worked good both ways. Sometimes it was a little, you kind of like pressing left and right a lot to get different items on the scale. It can be a bit monotonous. So I can see an argument for like wanting to play it with mouse and keyboard, even though I know Joe and I are both controller fiends. I kind of liked switching to mouse and keyboard just for the ease of the trades. Like, let's drag and drop so I don't have to cycle through a bunch of buttons. But like, I like that we have both options and they're both so easy, because for me, that's an accessibility win. Art of the game. Art's not my fave. I'm just going to say it. It's not pleasing to my eye, but that's not an objective complaint. It's just kind of like a matter of taste. I think maybe other people might feel differently, but just going to be upfront about it. It's not my cup of tea. Probably not something that would have ever attracted my eye, but Judd did link me to this game and it sounded cool. And, you know, threw out the word cozy and wholesome and like narrative building. And if I'd seen those keywords in the Steam store, I could see myself clicking on this even if we weren't reviewing it and being like, I want to see what this is about, because that's my vibe. Graphics aren't a deal breaker for me, and I don't think they're necessarily done badly in this game at all. They do feel like they have some love to them. They're just not my fave. More than that, the thing I most disliked about this game, I unfortunately didn't like any of the audio sound effects for the characters, especially our main character and all the NPCs. This game, I think its original language is German. It's available for a lot of language, I noticed when I loaded it up. And since it's mostly text-based with just ambient noises and sort of like abstract sound effects, like, that's, you know, they've made it super accessible to a lot of different regions. I think they did a really good job having your character and the NPCs using sounds that feel like they kind of make sense emotionally in any language or region. Like, it just feels really universal. I just wish I could turn it off because it feels a little mixed poorly. Like, we're in a really chill... I dislike the voices. And I really wish that was different, because I loved the music and the chill vibe of it so much that it was almost a little immersion breaking. Like, I was like, I went to the options. I was like, I wish I could turn the voices down, because it's almost doing like a really high, loud, like... You know how The Sims talk, where it's kind of like wordless? It's not really like that, but it's got that kind of feel to it. And this, so we kind of, to me, it was a little immersion breaking that we go from this like really cozy, chill, ambient vibe to like, oh, this NPC is kind of like screaming or laughing maniacally and nothing really happened. And like, that's cute, but that also made me feel a little bit like more kids game territory sometimes than adults, just because of that. I do think it's important to be able to turn stuff like that off or turn it down, but this game's also pretty simple, so I don't blame the devs for doing that. That was just the only thing I really didn't love here. Before we wrap up here, go out a rating. This game has more than just the setup I've described going on, and it has a decently long narrative story about magic and spirituality and like a really strange world you're exploring. And at first, you think you know what the game's doing, but it does open up some stuff later. It's tied in a bit with the karma we talked about earlier from trading. Getting good karma by giving people good deals or just sometimes some extra free stuff gives you soul energy. And harnessing soul energy is, frankly, it changes the mechanics of the game a lot. And the whole world, and it kind of gives you not only a way out from this desert island confinement, but also you have options, different options to kind of change the world and like find out what's really going on that even created like these weird island societies and all this madness going on, and you even, you know, kind of getting pulled from your universe. But it's not the longest game in the world, so I won't go super further there. I'll let players explore that themselves. I don't think it's going to take you a million hours to play through this game, but this game does seem like it has a lot of replayability. Like, even only giving it one playthrough, I could see a lot of different branching stuff. And even if I don't want to go back in there, and I'm not sure yet, I'm really curious what some of those options do. It's like, even with trading and going from town to town, I'll be like, man, this one guy really wanted... some dried bugs and I never saw them, and towards the end of the game I'm like, oh my god, that's where the dried bugs are. What if I got the boards from that guy and the nails from that guy? I was able to fix that bridge. And what if I hooked that guy up with those sugar cubes? You know, if I played through this again, I think I'd try to remember that guy was there and built my game around it. And like, that's just one of the small examples of like, you know, I don't doubt that this game really went hard on the choose your own adventure modular story thing. And I think they did knock it out of the park there. And that made it a pretty interesting play for me. Personally, I was more invested in the game once I pushed through and got to that point in the plot and had more options, add more of an interesting plot to wonder about, some mystery and magic and stuff. But yeah, I had a decently good time with this. And I definitely thought it was a really neat game.
Cool. Well, it clocks in at $14.99. What is your official verdict?
It's definitely a try it for me. I can't confidently say buy it. I think confidently say buy it if you think your kid would like the graphics and you want your kid to learn these sort of mechanics. And I think a lot of adults could like this game as well. But I could see myself like buying this for a friend's kid. I wanted to like introduce to these mechanics like maybe before their first board game campaign, because I think they did a really good job like making that organic. So I could see it being gratifying for like that sort of angle of things, or as an adult if you're vibing with the vibe of this game and none of it puts you off, like it's going to be very nostalgic for you and you might be like impressed with what they've done with it slash reminded of like our roots before we had a bunch of this stuff going on to explore narratives. Solid try it for me.
Cool. All right. We've got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Astroon Academy, developed by XCreate, published by Chemco, released June 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Engage in the daily life of the Magic Academy, complete assignments, and strive to become a skilled sorcerer with a campus filled with a school shop courtyard and magical vending machines. You'll experience the ultimate student life. Chris, what is going on in Astroon Academy?
Okay, Astroon Academy. So, this is a new, that is to say, not remade from 10 years ago, Chemco XCreate RPG. I've reviewed, I think it's close to 40 of these now. I don't remember. No, really, at last count, I did count them at some point, and it was in the 30s.
I don't doubt it. I own all of them on Xbox, too, so.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm pretty excited about this one, actually. Yeah, Astroon Academy takes place at a school for wizards. I mean, sorcerers, with you know, where kids can learn to be, you know, super powerful nuclear weapons of the gods. This adventure basically follows three female students and their teacher. You can see from the like cover art, you see the girls right there in the center, and off to the side is like some dude. Then you start the game and male protagonist, there you go. The dude in the background is actually your main character. But That is to say, he is actually the teacher. So this is the first, maybe the first JRPG in which the early protagonist is a 35-year-old man. That's three times the age of like a typical, you know, world saving JRPG protagonist. However, your teenage girls are kind of the stars of the show. You've got Spica, who is a kind of a sporty fire wielding wizard. I'm sorry, sorcerer, and in training. Mimosa, who is the quiet, polite one, who kind of is from a moneyed family, but she doesn't want to make a big deal. She just wants to kind of go her own way. She's the your wind character. And then Elnat, who is, you know, a total like feral child goblin. She's that anime character that has the animal fang coming out of her mouth at all times. You know what I'm talking about. Constantly hungry, wears her hoodie with the sleeves over her hands. And if she uses magic, she turns into a demon, temporarily. And so it's really funny in cutscenes, like they'll be using magic or whatever, and just without drawing any attention to it, you'll see her turn into her demon form and then right back. The game's really consistent with the visual storytelling in that way. Elnat's my favorite character, of course. She's great. She's awesome. Although Mimosa's weapon is a chainsaw. She's the quiet one and she wields the chainsaw. I love it. Your teacher's, he's kind of a drip. Like I said, male protagonists in these Kemco games are either really misanthropic or they're like really do-goody. He kind of falls on the do-goody side. But wait, he's your teacher and these are the students. So does that mean, yes, it does. Eventually, the girls get to go out on their own and it does become a female-led game. And, I'm not going to say anything about the plot, but I mean, teacher, students, like, you get it. Like, the students are eventually going to, like, go out on their own and have their adventure. And then they are joined by another character. I won't say anything else about this other character, but, you know, if you look at the, like, sales page, you'll see that there's, like, a team of four girls in a lot of the screenshots. So I'm not giving anything away that's not in the previews for the game. But let's just say your water character changes a few hours into the adventure. So really excited about this. Finally, a Kemco game that, you know, really actually does have not only a female protagonist, but an entire team of girls. And it's not weird. female characters are usually kind of weird in Kemco games. These girls actually have their own personalities and like they're friends. They're supportive of each other. They have like totally different things they bring to the table. And that is not to say that's nothing to say about the story at large, which is good. It's actually really, really. I mean, they usually these games are well written, although not very well translated. This is no exception. It's perfectly functional, but they'll say something like 1,000 years from now, but. They'll say like 1,000 years from now, but what they mean is in the past, which is technically true. If you say that something is 1,000 years from now, I guess it could go in either direction. So you have to watch out for that. But the thing about this story is that it, like some of the better Kemco X Create RPGs, it like throws twists at you and like really changes things and turns it on its ear and like. There's things that happen in this story. It's not just going to school and like, you know, learning to be a wizard or whatever. That's like part of the story, but it's not the whole story. So very intriguing things that happen in this game. Again, without giving anything away, I simply can't. So with these Kemco X Create RPGs, it usually comes down to the mechanics. What are you going to enjoy about this game? What do you got to look forward to doing? So it's got basically quite a few things that are from the previous games, but it kind of tones a few of them down a little bit. You do have the lottery system where you can spend an alternative currency that most of the time drops from enemies to try and roll for some really good weapons, armor, or enhancements. Enhancements are pretty cool. Like there's specific items that you can get as rewards for doing things. You can apply them to the characters. They kind of have like their own screen. You also have what's called the star array, which is kind of like you spend a further different kind of income to increase the stats of all the characters in your party. And, you know, the cost of those goes up as your characters strengthen more. You have, of course, and it's not introduced until a few hours into the adventure, actually. Like, the game really drops in systems. Like, it locks a lot of them away in the early game, and then they just kind of get introduced one at a time, so you're not overwhelmed. But it does occasionally bring in the weapons-eating weapons system.
Nice.
Yeah, which is really cool. We always love that. It also has an overarching missions system where you get achievements for doing even the most mundane of things in the game, like, you know, using a physical skill 30 times, defeating 80 enemies, register new enemies in the catalog, and you get rewards for all of these. You not only have short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals that you can do, you can also gain lottery points by completing enough of the rewards, like, in the meta. So if you've, like, completed, you know, 5 short-term goals, then they'll drop, like, 60 star stones on you, and then you can use those for the lottery later. And then there's, like, unlockable better rewards if you want to spend some of those points instead. You can purchase stuff with the points, of course. Lots and lots of systems in this game, just, like, a really high-quality mobile, like, kind of thing. But if you just switch the game onto easy mode, you can just bypass all of that and just enjoy the adventure. Your character's natural level ups and, like, a few items here and there and keeping up with your weapons, you'll pretty much get through the game, no problem. Nice. But the game does feature 4 levels of difficulty, including a very hard mode, in which case you will need all of the things at your disposal. And honestly, this is one of those games where I'm probably going to play through it first in normal mode to get the story, and then back through in very hard mode, because I really enjoy the combat in this. The combat has a lot of systems of, like, you know, each character has their own unique thing they bring to the battle. You'll be happy to know Elnat, our food-obsessed goblin girl, can summon food-based monsters to come and join you. Yeah, the weakest of which is a flan, and they not only will fight alongside you, but they will enhance the characters in a certain way until they get murdered and, you know, have to leave the fight for a time. But don't worry, they'll be back in the next flan? Fight.
Are they trying to diss flan?
No. There's all kinds of food that she can bring to battle. It's just, it's a summoned entity, so if it dies, then it just leaves the battle, and then you can't summon it again until the next one.
But we're saying if her weakest thing is flan, she's doing pretty good, because flan's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Flan's where it starts. It goes up. But they're all food-based, which is great. By the way, her demon form is great. It just looks like she's, like, wearing a black, like, one of those skin suits or whatever, but, like, still, like, with all her regular clothes on. And then it's got, like, the neon, like, you know, one eye is a circle, one eye is an X, and, like, it's very anime looking. Like, it just looks like a cool costume. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, the girls are adorable. The battles are really fun, and you have tons and tons of, like, options. There's tons of systems. The story's great. And, like I said, you've got, like, just all that stuff that you can, like, pile onto this game or ignore if you just want to enjoy the story, which, may I reiterate, is great. So this may be my favorite Kemco X-Create RPG.
And in fact, that's saying a lot.
Yeah. But anyways, I'll let you ask the question and I'll keep going on about this.
Well, it's $14.99. Give us your verdict.
Yeah, if you're going to buy one Kemco X-Create RPG to try out this, like, you know, long line of games they've been coming out with, like, once a month for, like, 10 years, this is the one. This is very good. Wow. I'm duly impressed by what appeared at first to just be like, oh, this is, you know, new, so it's probably pretty good. But it really exceeded my expectations, and I really, I'm going to be playing through this one for the rest of the way, you know, because I'm trying to beat 50 Switch games in 2024, and this is a great candidate for that. Nice. I made several saves points so I could go back and, like, play through a part slower so that I won't have to burn through it for review purposes, but,
Cool, that's how you know it's good.
Yeah, definitely pick this one up if you're, like, at all interested. It's a solid JRPG. Don't let the internet's reputation they've given Kemco, like, slow you down on this one. This is one of the gems for sure.
Well, it's officially on my wish list now. So
sweet.
Very good.
And finally, girls in the Kemco games. God, it took so long. I think there's one other game, and it was only kind of a technicality. So this one is unambiguously the girl power Kemco game, and that's great.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through. Thanks, everyone, for being here, hanging out.
We did it.
Keeping me company the whole time. Big thanks to Andy for coming on, doing his thing.
Thank you, Andy.
Brooke, did you check out any Bound Together? Is there a certain song you want to hear?
I did. I was thinking Joe Cam Stole My Bike. No, just kidding. Not that one.
That's a good one.
What about Sweet Dream Lullaby?
Sure.
One right before that.
Works for me.
Yeah. Cool.
Best of luck. I know it's a ways away, but best of luck at your panel, Brooke.
Thank you, guys. And before we split off, I wanted to say, look up what kind of merch is going to be there, because like I said, you know, after I vomit all day and then give the panel, I got 3 free days. If you see anything you want me to pick up there, let me know, man. I'll grab it for you, mail it to you. I'm pretty excited.
Huzzah.
Yay. I guess that goes
that's how this came up.
All of our listeners.
Yeah, I was like, oh, what kind of video game stuff do you want me to look for, Joe? He was like, Earthbound, and then we started talking about this. Of course, I always think of you and Earthbound. Stuff comes up, Chris.
Nice.
Because Earthbound is great.
Yeah, it's great. You should play it. It's on the Switch.
Should. Everyone, if you have a Switch, play Earthbound.
Please.
That was one of the best games out there.
We got no excuse now.
That was
4 for 4. All of us agree. Play Earthbound.
Please.
My phone's actually playing it on his Switch stream right now.
Oh, nice.
Really convenient timing there.
Anyway, does anyone have any final words to end this episode?
Get your life insurance policies.
Wait, I had a final thought. Joe Cam stole my bike. So
nice.
Give it back.
Pretty upset right now. God damn it.